folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here.
Hey, Petra, you recently wrote a blog post about how you create your conference talks. And I thought this would be a fun topic to dive into because I know there's a lot of people out there who want to get started with meetups and conference talks, and maybe they don't know what goes into a talk. And so I thought we could have you go through your process. I could share a little bit about my process, and then maybe we could give people some tips for like, where do they even start if they've never given a conference talk?
That's a great idea. Maybe I can talk about the motivation for the blog post for a minute. And it's basically two things. So I don't know if people know, I'm a conference organizer myself. So a lot of people are approaching us because they want to speak at one of our events. And the third thing that we usually say is send us a video recording of you delivering a talk somewhere. And they're oftentimes like, I don't have one. And then we're like, maybe then our stage is not the right stage for you to be on, because speaking on a big conference stage needs a lot of practice. And being a speaker myself, I know that over the years, you really need to build that skill. Your first talks most likely suck, and then you get better in delivering the talk and creating the talk, and hitting a topic that is of interest for the target audience and all these kind of things. So that's one thing. I would like to have more good speakers as a conference organizer. And on the other hand, with my speaker hat on, oftentimes people say like, oh, I would actually love to do it. I could never be on that stage, and I could never be a public speaker. And I really want to get a word out. You can, because I hated it. I do it in a foreign language that is not mine. It's hard. I get it. But that's why I wanted to share the process, how much work it actually is and how much practice it actually needs to deliver such a talk on a big conference stage, just to tell people, hey, it's just work. So it's not you. If you cannot go from zero public speaking experience to a big conference stage, that's just not, nobody does that. What is your experience? So how you build that skill over time as well, right?
Yeah, the very first event that I spoke at, like outside of speaking at like all hands meetings at my companies or things like that, was...
So step number one, all internal meetings.
Yeah, internal. You do a lot of public speaking internally, and that's a great way to practice because it's a friendly audience. I think my very first public talk was at a meetup in San Francisco, a free meetup. I think I gave a 20-minute talk. I think there were two other speakers. And then from there, I spoke at like a little local conference. Someone at that meetup ran a little local conference. And so it was like,
nice.
It was like maybe 200 people. It was really informal and casual. So that was like a nice way to like step up a little bit. And then I think I did a couple more meetups, and then eventually I think the very first big conference I spoke at was Product Management Festival in Switzerland.
Zurich. Yeah.
And that, it's not, even that is not that big of an event. I think they had like between 300 and 500 attendees. And so I gradually, like I started it like small free event with 50 people in the room to like a small local conference. Right? Like it was just gradual step ups.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it was that way, because I still remember that very first meetup. I gave a talk about product managers being the decision maker, which is hilarious because I would not argue that today. I used, just to give some like timeline on this, George W. Bush was president of the United States. And he used to always say, I'm the decider. And I think my talk was about how the product manager shouldn't be the decider. So I think cross-functional team decisions and how the product manager was more the facilitator. And I remember like at that time, like I didn't know how to create a talk. I didn't know how to give structure to a talk. I just had this thing from current events that I wanted to use as an analogy. And I was so nervous. Like I had never given a real public talk. I did a ton of research. Like I read the Nancy Duarte books. Like the amount of
effort amazing.
I put into this first talk, because it was scary, right? Like,
yeah.
I'd been to a million meetups, but I had never spoken at a meetup. And it went really well. But I think it went really well because I did my homework. I learned how to structure a talk. And then even then, that talk was very conceptual. It was about an idea. I think as I did more talks, I started to realize, like, what makes me unique as a speaker is I have to share my personal experiences. And as I like did more meetups, and especially as I got into conferences, I started they weren't just idea talks. They were idea plus experience talks.
Yeah, but the idea talks work fine. So I think if you start out with public speaking, even you found an idea somewhere else and you want to bring it to your company or your context, to your local meetup or something like that, it actually does work, because a lot of people maybe haven't read that book or haven't stumbled across this presenter or something like that. So that is an amazing first attempt to public speaking, I'd say. For me, the trajectory was super similar. So one of the first public talks that I gave was on how you could use Myers-Briggs type indicator test to create personas. Not a topic that I would talk about anymore either. So that was a fun one. And then I did a lot of panels and Q&A sessions and fireside chats along the way that helped me to be a bit more, because that's the easier thing for me. I know a lot of people don't have a script if there's a fireside chat, so it freaks the hell out of them that they're on stage and people could ask random questions. I actually loved it. I think I'm good at that. So that was kind of my stage therapy. So I could go in front of bigger audiences with a fireside chat and with an actual talk. So that's definitely something that I did in the meantime. And then, bigger and bigger stages, but slow and steady, and a lot of them over the last few years. And I'm still practicing to some extent. And it's still not easy. I'm still massively nervous. I still need to figure out what I'm going to wear to feel comfortable on stage. So all of that is part of this preparation process, at least for me.
You know what I want to highlight is, like, some people might be wondering, well, like, how did you get to speak at that first meetup? So I used to run a product tank in Portland. We were always looking for speakers. Yeah. All I did to get that first talk was I asked to speak. They did a call for speakers. I sent in a request saying, can I speak at your event? They said yes. And as a meetup organizer, we were always looking for speakers. And in Portland, we had two speakers each night. We really wanted a male speaker and a female speaker. Mm-hmm. And we had tons of men apply, and I had to work really hard to get an equal number of women. So especially for our female listeners, if you are looking for your first speaking engagement, go to your local meetups. I promise you, they are looking for first-time speakers.
And if you wonder what you can talk about, I think the easiest thing is show your work. Yeah. You created an opportunity solution tree. You created a story map. Whatever you did, and even if you think it was nothing tremendously exciting or something like that, people don't see enough examples of what other people do and real life applications of the things some of us are actually teaching. So that is usually a good first talk that one could give to say, like, hey, we just underwent a bigger discovery. This is what we did. This is what worked. This is what didn't. Is that the TED talk that you're going to give in 5 years from now? Maybe not. But there's always work to show. And I think it's the easy first talk that you could actually create.
I think one of the things people underestimate is that, like, we all know the concepts. Okay, I know how to create an opportunity solution tree in theory.
Yeah.
But people want examples of actual practice. Yeah. So if you can take a concept and then share how you put it into practice, what worked, what didn't work, what was hard, what came naturally to you, what are your best tips for someone who's never done it before? Those types of talks are really popular, and especially at your local meetup or at a product camp.
Yes, and even on our big product stage, and some of the most well-rated talks each year at Product at Heart are the ones where people showed what they did. So product leaders shared the product principles that they created and they worked for the team, or how they implemented the product operating model and what they did from the stuff that they read in a book or something like that, right? So people really want to hear this real life applications of the things that they usually read out there and see out there and find out there. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into bigger talks. So I think in your blog post, you talked about how you created your Why Oslo talk, and Why Oslo, I think, had something like 1,000 attendees. It's a pretty big stage. They share the videos online. So what was your process for creating that talk?
It was actually a tricky one. It was my biggest talk as well. They told me 1,400 people in the audience at the end, and it was Oslo Concert House. So it's usually where the symphonic orchestra is actually playing. And that's where we have been on stage, right? Teresa was there with me. So both of us have been there. Friendly stage, they're frightening stages and friendly stages, so that's definitely one of the friendliest stages on that planet. What I always do to start out with, I try to get as much information as possible about the audience. So who is in the audience? For Why Oslo, for example, the challenge was not only product people, but some design people, a lot of design people, actually some product people and a few engineers. So I definitely knew I need to find a topic that is of interest for all of them. I cannot do my usual product spiel, right? So I needed to come up with a new talk for them, actually. So that is important. And then think about what is the topic that they are interested in and that I'm excited to spend 9 months with, because that's usually what takes me to create a conference talk. So it needs, and if I get bored of the topic 4 weeks in, that doesn't help either, right? So it needs to be something that is interesting to me and presumably interesting to the audience. And to find that is usually a tricky one. And this time I decided I go for the topic of managing up, because seeing that being a problem from the other side, so product leaders are not getting enough feedback on how they do and how they could support the teams in better ways. And I hear that a lot in my coaching. So I was like, hey, maybe I can create a talk for the individual contributor side, how they can actually manage up a bit more actively so that this feedback reaches the leaders in the room. So that was something I was excited about. And then I decided, okay, this is the title, the work title that I'm going to use. Then I try to think a bit of putting myself in their shoes. Maybe how would an engineer listen to it? How would a design person listen to it? Do a bit of research, talk to some people. So the usual discovery bit, right? And then I dig out everything I can about the topic, all the books, all the blog posts that are already written, what are other people's takes. And then I need to find my take, and that usually takes quite some time, that I reflect on, okay, with all this content already created, is there something to add to the body of knowledge, and is there a Petra story in all of that, right? Because otherwise random person could be on stage, ChatGPT could narrate to them. So there needs to be a bit of me in the actual story. But usually I find that if I am excited about the topic, then I'm usually find something that is uniquely me. And then I create a first mind map. So what am I going to say? What are arguments that I maybe want to bring? Sometimes it's quotes. So Rick Rubin has this book out there, The Art of Being, and he calls about collecting seeds. So that's basically what I do here. It's a bit of an inspo board to some extent. That's an important part. And then I use one specific card deck for the last, I don't know, six-ish years. And it's called the Cicero Public Speaking Deck. And that helps me just to organize my thoughts, because it follows, they analyzed what all the big speeches had in common. And then they came up with, I think, six structures that one could use. And then at some point I decided on one of these structures, and then I just try to fill my content in there. It's a bit more complex than it sounds right now. And I do this physically, usually on the floor of my office, laying out the card deck, laying out a lot of post-its. And that's basically a bit of a creating the storyline and making sure that the talk is inspiring, because oftentimes otherwise it has the tendency to be boring and me adding too many details and too many background information. So that's what I need the context for. And then there is an important step when I think about takeaway moments for the audience, because now I have the topic, now I have a general flow, now I have some important arguments, it has a structure. But now my question, okay, what is in for them? So what is the gift that I'm handing them? What is the one activity that they maybe could do the week after they return from the conference? So how would that improve their life? Or how could that have an impact on their team? And I usually need to find one or two of these things, bigger things, and make sure that they pop so that everybody knows when to take the picture of the slide. Slide design, that's another entirely a different beast. After I did that, I start to first create a script, by the way. Ah, that's maybe a non-native thing for the people that are non-native in English and want to deliver and talk in English. It really is the case that I have to pre-script every freaking word that I say on that stage. And then I re-rehearse the hell out of it so that people don't even realize that I'm not spontaneously delivering that talk. So that's really important timing-wise. If you speak at that meetup, not so important. If you speak on a big stage like Why Oslo, super important, because there's the time of running on stage, big red letters if you're over time, and you want that the organizers of such a conference want you to be on time. So if they grant you 30 minutes, they grant you 30 minutes and not 35. So that's why I have rehearsed that much.
And not 25, right?
Like, and not 25 either.
Yeah,
you're so
right. This is something I think people don't realize. Like, you have to hit the time.
Yes, you have to hit the time. And if I need to do it in German, it's a bit easier for me to wing it. And I can make sure to speed up or to slow down or to add another argument. I can't if I need to deliver the talk in English.
So I have a funny story about timing. When I was going on the stage for Mind the Product, I think it was San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the last speaker at Mind the Product San Francisco.
19, yeah.
Martin said to me, literally as I was walking out on the stage, he goes, "Teresa, we're a little ahead of time, so feel free to go long." And I look at him, I go, "How long?" And he goes, you can go, I think I was scheduled for 30 minutes. He goes, "You can go 35 or 40. And I was like, wow, Martin clearly respects me as a speaker for at the last minute to tell me I can go 5 to 10 minutes long. And my most proudest moment is I actually went, I think, like 37 minutes long in that talk.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's perfect.
And the unscripted part is where I had the best line of the whole talk, which was, if you go back and watch that talk, at some point in the end, I say something like, "You're never one feature away from success."
Yeah, I remember
that. Something like, "I have bad news for all of you. You're never one feature away from success." And the crowd erupted. And I wasn't done. Like, I paused. I waited for the crowd to calm down. And then I said, "And you never will be." And that was by far the most powerful moment of the whole talk. And it was completely impromptu, unscripted, just trying to hit Martin's timeline.
I loved it. That's a great story to tell. Yeah. But so you need to rehearse a lot still, even if it's not.
Yeah, so I actually construct my talks really differently. I love that your talks are like very bottoms up, organic, like pull in all these inputs, figure out what you're going to say. I think I do it a little bit differently because I first of all, like,
sure.
I have a pretty narrow niche. Like, I only write and speak about discovery. And like most topics in discovery, I've probably encountered at some point. Like, it's nothing's going to be brand new. And so when I'm invited to speak, I always think about, like you, based on the audience, what do I think they need to hear right now in this moment in time? Mm-hmm. And so what I start with is, what's the primary takeaway I want the audience to have?
Yeah.
And I think I got this from a Nancy Duarte book. I think in Resonate, she talks about, get really clear about where your audience is today and where you want them to be at the end of your talk. And so before I even like once I have a topic, the very first thing I'm doing is thinking about, where are they today? Where do I want them to be in the end? And so I can tell you how this works for Product at Heart. Mm-hmm. At Product at Heart, I really felt like what I was hearing in the industry was this pushback about nobody works the way that's written in the books.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to speak to that. I wanted to like, where the audience is today is some skepticism about, does the stuff that we read about in books really work? And where I wanted them to land is, I can find my first step. I can do this. And my talk at Product at Heart was titled, Everyone Can Do Continuous Discovery, even if your organization doesn't work this way. And so that was sort of my topic. That was how I wanted to move people. And then the next thing I do is I define, if my audience only remembers one thing, what do I want it to be? And that's almost like the catch line of the talk. Yeah. And let me ask you this, Petra, what do you think my one thing was from my Product at Heart talk?
Particular talk, meet the people where they are.
Yeah. Okay. Close. So
she said that 20 times on stage.
I did.
I guess.
So I do a headline. I do a headline, and then I do like two or three subtopics. So my headline for my Product at Heart talk was organizational change starts with you, and that was how I ended my talk. Right. My number two was meet people where they are.
that
right?
Worked.
And so that I've written nothing yet, but I have on paper, organizational change starts with you, meet people where they are. And then to get the structure of the talk, I start with, where are people today? Okay, well, they work in feature factories, or they work in organizations that are in the messy middle, or they work in organizations that have adopted the discovery habits, but because of our economic climate, they've regressed. Okay, well, those are the three scenarios I talk through in the talk, right? So I start very almost like the tip of a pyramid with like, what's the one takeaway? And then I start to build it out from there.
Yeah, that's a nice approach as well. But is it still, and are you scripting it or are you rehearsing a lot or are you freestyling? But I bet you're rehearsing still. Otherwise you won't hit the timings.
I don't script it. What I do is after I construct like, here's the structure of the talk. So like for Product at Heart, and this talk's available online, as is Petra's Managing Up talk. So for people listening, now that you're hearing how we created them, you can go watch those talks and like see how this came out. Yeah. And we'll put them in the show notes. Yeah. But I started with this structure of like, okay, my headline is organizational change starts with you. My subhead is meet people where they are, the golden rule of organizational change. Then I came up with these three scenarios. So now I have a structure of the talk, right? I'm going to introduce the idea. I'm going to walk through the three scenarios. I'm going to hammer home my headline and my subheadline. At this point, I work on slides. So I start to think through, I don't have a script. I'm just thinking through, how am I going to visually tell this story? And then once I have slides, I write bullet points for each slide. But I don't script it out. I just, what are the main points I need to hit on the slide? What's the story I'm going to tell? And then I do rehearse. When I'm rehearsing, I'm impromptu going from bullet points to script. And it changes because as I hear it out loud, like I literally stand at my desk and deliver it like I would on stage.
Yeah, I loved that you're saying that.
As I hear it out loud, I work through what are the words that are going to work.
Yes.
And I might write down like some key phrases, but I never script my talks. I'm always just like using rehearsal to like find the wording and the phrasing that's going to work.
Yeah.
And then I rehearse it enough that when I'm on stage, I can ad lib, but it's not really ad libbed because I've given it 40 times already.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that because I'm working with an editor for my blog post content, she makes sure that the blog posts have correct spelling and enough subheadlines. And she does
the
a bit of
same
the,
editor
the
I use. So
of my blog
shout
post,
out.
By the way. Hello, Melissa.
Shout out to Melissa Suzuno.
And Melissa always gives, so I collect a lot of feedback throughout the process of creating the talk. One piece of feedback is Melissa's feedback because she's really good with words and text and stuff like that. And she always corrects all my English in the initial script, but then I have to diverge from it because sometimes the words just don't flow the way they would be correct. So I need to kind of bring the Petra back in
totally.
On stage. And maybe it's not always the perfect English or the sentence is not super well put, but it's that's the way how I remember things and how I think it should flow. And let's face it, most of the audience is non-native either, so nobody will actually realize. And if it helps me to actually remind a certain sentence that I want to land on or something like that, that's super helpful. So I do a lot of back and forth, slight design, script tweaks, slight design, rehearsals. And as you were saying, so I, this time for the Why Oslo talk, for the first time recorded myself and listened to myself delivering the talk and then tweaked it based on that, because it helps me a lot to speak it out loud, to say it out loud, to listen back to it, and then to really kind of, in the end, it's a bit like spoken word poetry for me, because that's how I remind things.
A lot of the work that I'm doing with rehearsal is what words am I emphasizing and when? Mm-hmm. And there's actually a really good example of this in this podcast, like our intro to our podcast, where Petra says all things product. Like the way she emphasizes the words is perfect. And I remember when I narrated my book, I worked with a director and the director said something like, you must do a lot of public speaking because your cadence of reading is very dynamic. It's like you're speaking to a live audience. And I think that's one of the hardest things for people to learn. It just takes a lot of rehearsal, a lot of watching yourself speak, and a lot of practice.
Yeah, it actually is a ton of rehearsal. And with a 30-minute talk, that's a lot of time investment. So definitely, it's what we as conference organizers see a lot of our speakers underestimate as well, is just how many time they need to block to rehearse their talk over and over and over again, because you need the entire run through. At least that's what most speakers and I would actually tell people. And then, that for 30-minute talks and you rehearse it, like I think it's in the blog post somewhere, but I think I rehearsed it 30-ish times. Yeah. So that's a lot of time that you need to block in your calendar.
I know a lot of people, a lot of speakers don't do this.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm going to say. A lot of speakers are not great speakers. And I think for listeners, if you want to be really good, if you want to be one of the best speakers at the event, it does require this level of structure in your creation process. It does require this much rehearsal and this much practice. And look, I don't want to scare anybody from this, because like, if you're just going to go
I would love more people on stages, more diverse opinions, please.
If I was speaking at a local meetup next month, I'm not going to rehearse this much, right?
Yeah,
we're talking about a big stage talk.
Yes.
And so you have to look at, like, you want to match your creation process and your practice time to your experience level and the stage that you're going to be on. So like, if I was speaking at a meetup next month, I probably wouldn't prep very much at all, because I can go wing it because I've done so much public speaking on these topics. But if I get invited to a 1600 person conference, I am definitely not going to wing it. Like, they're paying me and I need to be professional about it. So that the other thing to remember is, like, some of the stuff that we're talking about is because we're talking about 1400, 1600 person events. So it's a different scale than like your local meetup with 50 people in the room.
Yeah, definitely. And still, if it's a topic that I'm not so familiar talking about, I still would need to do some research and forming an opinion. And so there's still a lot of the work that I would do just in very short time frame. So to say, I would time box most of these things to prepare such a meetup. And by the way, another thing that why public speaking and creating talks is such an amazing thing is it brings so much clarity to your own thinking and approach. So sharing stuff that you did with others is really one part of a learning journey to some extent, right? Because it helps you to sense the mastery that you gained in one particular or on one particular topic. And it helps you to reflect on some of the things you did in the past. Did it work? Did it not? It's oftentimes that we don't do these things if we don't commit to, for example, and a blog post could do. A talk is more effort, I know. But it's another thing I have the best conversations after such delivering such a talk, because if people from the audience are coming up, the topic definitely resonated with them. Sometimes it's critique, sometimes it's embracing some ideas, but I have the most profound conversations oftentimes after I've been on stage for a conference or a meetup or even a fireside chat or something like that. So I really think it's worthwhile to kind of fight your fight or flight instincts and go on that stage and just deliver the talk. And it's really like everybody in the audience is so happy that it's not them and that it's you on that stage right now. So that always helps me a lot. It's really rewarding.
The other thing I'll say, like for people that have never given a talk, put more work into your first talk than you might think. Right? Like that's, you're learning, right? So use that as an opportunity to learn and to practice. But don't let this level of preparedness scare you. Like if you're just speaking at your local meetup, it's going to be a friendly audience. And
it's, yeah.
You're right. So like, do think about the structure of your talk. Do think about what you uniquely have to offer. Do rehearse. But you don't have to rehearse 40 times for your local meetup.
Yeah, no.
So remember, like match the effort to your experience level and the size of the stage.
And find a format that works for you. So maybe it's Toastmasters in the beginning. Maybe it's PowerPoint karaoke. So it's not even your topic that you're on stage with or something like that. I think whatever helps to get you on a stage really is cool and appropriate.
Definitely.
Yeah, a great topic.
We dove deep on this. I think we're 30 minutes in, which is amazing. This might be our longest episode ever. But it was a lot of fun. Hopefully for our listeners, it was helpful. Just start is I think what we can wrap with.
And now it's so fun to see what they think about our talks with all the background information that they have.
I know, right? We'll put links to all those talks we referenced in the show notes.
That's challenging. Cool topic.
Thanks,
Thank you, Teresa.